inside the bridge. Come on, white tiger. Otherwise, I cannot see anything. Elite says, stay cool. We're bringing you the white tiger. Stay cool. We're in a good position.
Good work, Mark. The Vettel is in this lap. You are next.
Hamilton 3.5, 3.5.
Okay, I don't want to know.
Formula1.net. In this edition, we'll be reviewing all of the major controversies from last weekend's European Grand Prix, including manipulation. Ferrari and Fernando fume as race stewards react slowly to Lewis Hamilton's decision to race the safety car. The man from Del Monte isn't very happy, but is the Italian manufacturer right to be angry, or was it simply a case of hard luck? And up and away, as Mark Webber and Heikki Kovalainen were involved in one of the most shocking accidents in years, we ask if the FIA's 2011 aerodynamic proposals should be reviewed. All this and more on this edition of the GPcast. And as ever, I'm joined by a panel of the highest pedigree. Well, there's only two, but it's a resident panellist. It's Gaz and Johnny, so good evening, fellas.
Good evening, mate.
Evening.
So, have a good weekend. Enjoy the European Grand Prix.
Yep.
Oh, definitely.
Better than the football. I'll stop looking at the football now.
Yeah, of course, this was Formula One's third visit to the Valencia street circuit. I want to ask, have you actually warmed to it yet? It's still very negative in the minds of a lot of Formula One fans, but do you think this weekend did anything to improve your view on it?
I think it produced a good race for the very reason that Mark had an accident. And that kind of like, I mean, before that, it was, you know, you were kind of thinking, right, Lewis had a go at Vettel at the start. There's a bit of action at the start. There's always action at a Formula One start. It's the most exciting part of the race in most cases. And then you kind of sort of settled into the you know, the momentum and monotony that is Valencia. And then suddenly I'm looking at the TV and I just see a Red Bull fly through a sign. And that was kind of like, oh my God. And then from there it got quite exciting because of all the incidents happened up and after that.
Definitely. And we'll come on to Mark Webber and Heikki Kovalainen's little incident
together
a little bit later on. But let's first talk about Friday, and obviously a number of the new teams were just a raft of new parts onto their cars, and obviously the most evident was the likes of Ferrari and Renault, who strapped on versions of Red Bull's blown diffuser. Despite this, though, neither of the teams were able to stop Red Bull taking the front row of the grid. Were you surprised that the Milton Keynes-based outfit was still so competitive over a single lap?
And not really, because everyone before this race was saying, "Oh, McLaren will probably work it because Red Bull street circuit specialists." But if you've got to remember Monaco, they were quick there as well, and that car does have some tremendous grip in slow corners now, as well as quick corners, and there are actually a couple of quick corners like the final sector.
Well, by their own admission, McLaren were surprised to be as quick in Valencia. They expected a weekend of damage limitation. What do you think made the difference for the MP425 this weekend?
I think it's a fundamentally fast car. And with the F-duct, which is by far, like last year they had their best curve system, this year they've got the best F-duct system. And
I suppose they spent 2 years developing it.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah, so, right. I mean, it's just been, and I think they just had they were still the fastest car. And I think they were kind of a bit disheartened by the fact that Mercedes, Renault, and Ferrari all turned up with these blown diffusers. And I was kind of thinking, right, well, if these blown diffusers are as good as everyone says they are, they're going to be probably just ahead of Renault or probably just ahead of Mercedes, you know, so they're going to, and I was quite impressed myself that the team was able to, you know, get loose in the top three. I think really, like I say, the McLaren's just that 25 is a fundamentally fast car. Like, in the same way the Red Bull's a fast car, And, you know, it's not like last year where you would have Toyota make a surprise visit or Force India make a surprise visit to the top, to the pole, because it worked. It just managed to work in Spa. I think it's gone back more to the F1 we used to, which is that you've got several fast cars at the start of the season, and they will carry through to, you know, on all circuits with cars having minor advantages and disadvantages across different circuits. I was pretty surprised though, briefly on Mercedes, to see them so far back.
That's a very good point. Just to go back to what you were saying earlier there, I would agree. I tend to agree with you in a sense that given that this year is more of an evolution than the radical changes we had in 2009, it seems that the two devices which have become key for all of the teams are either the blown diffuser or the F-duct. Now, McLaren and Red Bull are the pioneers in either of the fields, so I suppose they've been able to have a lot of knowledge of these two systems, and they're able to fully utilise them, and that's why their car's a lot more stable, and as you say, a lot more quick, are still able to find this raw pace, where you get the feeling that, you know, Mercedes, the prime example that you've used to have stuck an F-duct on, and they've messed around with the blown diffuser, they're still not, you know, properly configured it. So it's maybe one thing being able to bring these new updates to the car, but as quite clearly shown by Schumacher and Rosberg, who clearly struggled, and even Ferrari, you know, who had a day off filming, a bit dubious really if whether that was testing or not, but we'll not go on to that. And yet they still failed to really beat Red Bull or McLaren in qualifying pace. I mean, they were beaten hands down in single up. I mean, Alonso could do nothing, for example, about either the Red Bulls or Hamilton.
Yeah, I was quite surprised. It was nice to see Massa getting back up there as well, also with the Ferrari, but again, I mean, I don't know. I mean, Alonso's, again, speculating, and a lot of people have said, like Andrew Benson, the BBC blog, have said that Alonso could have won that without the safety car. And I won't disagree with that, because you don't know what teams are doing at the time. I mean, just for the safety car, I think the McLaren, and instructed Lewis, right, you've had a go at him now, save your tyres, you know, save your fuel, save your tyres. And, you know, I think that was after the safety car. But, you know, if the teams are telling the drivers to save the car, and we get in, it's going to be more like an endurance race with sprint sections. So that's what F1's becoming now. So you don't know what Alonso's doing. I wouldn't have wrote off Alonso for the win. You'd never write off Fernando Alonso.
Well, that's true. And I think if you look at before the safety come out, he was the fastest man on the track. So maybe that's the reason that the likes of Andrew Benson and so are making that point. And you're right, you can't rely on Alonso. But as you say, I mean, we heard throughout the race Hamilton being told to back off slightly to save fuel and things like that. So as you say, it's obviously over the long term, it is an endurance race, but with teams allowed short bursts to challenge. So I suppose we'll never know. Let's move actually to the start of the race. And Mark Webber, who was second on the all Red Bull front row, he made a terrible start, didn't he? And he found himself way down the order. Meanwhile, at the front, Hamilton and Vettel had a little tangle together. So ultimately, Red Bull decided to gamble on Webber by bringing him in early in the hope of allowing him to make up positions while he was in clear air. But as has been the case for Red Bull for this entire season, another problem in the pit stop meant that he lost more time than he bargained for. And ultimately, this led him into the path of Heikki Kovalainen in the Lotus. And when he attempted to overtake the Finn, he crashed right into the back of him and somersaulted into the air. What unfolded was probably one of the most violent accidents I've seen in Formula 1 for years. But luckily, none of the drivers were hurt. All the marshals for it, that matter. But afterwards, obviously, we got a bit of finger pointing from either side. Kovalainen and Lotus were blaming Webber and Red Bull and vice versa. But in your opinion, I want to ask both you, Johnny and Gaz, who was really to blame for the incident? Or was it just simply a case of more racing? Should Kovalainen have simply moved over for the faster car, or as argued by his tech boss Matt Gascoigne, was he right to hold his position and race on? And was Webber's move slightly ill-judged in the first place? I mean, the Lotus obviously lacks a lot more downforce than the Red Bull, so it was natural that Kovalainen would have to brake earlier than maybe Red Bull Webber had been doing all weekend. And if you watch the footage, he gets very, very close in the slipstream. He really, really overcompensated on sitting right behind the Finn's wing. So do you think he should have maybe judged it a little bit better? What's your opinion on the accident?
I'd say it'd be 50-50 because Webber was having another red mist moment, because you remember when he drove into the back of Hamilton at Melbourne, that was kind of similar, and the other half to blame on Kovalainen, because really, like David Coulthard was saying, it's not a circuit like Monaco where, or if you just sit there and stick drive in the middle of the road, you're more likely to keep holding up, because it's fairly open, although you hardly ever see any overtaking. But I think Kovalainen really shouldn't have tried to block Webber, and for the moment I think he should have just let him by, because Webber will only have just got him at the next corner. So I think he was just too keen to let me just dice with this Red Bull, because it's been a year since I've been able to do that.
It's good television time for Lotus.
Well, yeah, I agree. I think, really, if you want to have a situation where the slower cars just move over, then what you're introducing there is a spec series like Le Mans, when you're going to have, you know,
Class A.
It's not going to work in F1. It's too short a race. It's utterly pointless.
You know, it's pretty rude to these new teams.
Exactly.
Realize they're slow. They are off the pace in comparison to the front
runners. Webber, if you look at Webber, he took too much of the slipstream, and he actually, when Kovalainen moved, Webber followed him into the slipstream, and that was Kovalainen moving sort of the brake position. And Webber said he looked away and looked back, you know, he wasn't concentrating what he was doing perhaps. So, you know, without being too harsh on Webber, it's probably something it was going to happen eventually. It was just unlucky that it was him. And if it was, you know, like I say, if it's so easy to overtake these cars, why was he trying so hard to overtake? He was setting it up like that was Lewis Hamilton, and that was for the lead of the race, the amount of slipstream was taken out. It was Heikki Kovalainen and a Lotus, you know. Fine, I suppose he didn't want to get held up. But, you know, as Mike Gascoigne said, if he held him up for, say, 3 or 4 laps or even 3 or 4 corners, then it's worth it. It's racing. And I want to see that. And it was exciting to watch. Even, you know, the jousting. Even though it's just a Lotus and a Red Bull, it's exciting to watch. And obviously, I'd rather them not crash every time, because that looked horrific.
It was really hot in the mouth stuff. Shades of Ricardo Patrese in Estoril 1992, Johnny. I'm sure you remember.
Oh, yes. that was a hat in the mouth moment.
Yeah.
I think this one has set a new benchmark.
I mean, as you said at the beginning of this topic, guys, he hit the advertising board, and then Webber's comment said that the most scariest part of the accident was when he was in the air, in case he hit something like a bridge or something. So it could have been a whole lot worse.
That's what Patrese came close to hitting when he cleaned back Berger's car. It was a little overhead bridge, but...
Luckily, though, he was okay.
He's no stranger to being turned upside down, though.
It's it's something of PlayStation-like behaviour. It's quite a corny link I've put there, but forgive me, because obviously Mark Webber himself used the word PlayStation to describe Formula 1 for 2011, because obviously last week's World Motorsport Council meeting, it was decided that Formula 1 will see the introduction of movable rear wings in an attempt to increase overtaking. But given Webber's frightening accident and the frightening difference in speed between the Lotus and Red Bull when they're close to each other on a Sunday, and the fact that with movable rear wings, this might actually heighten it and make it more unsafe. Would the introduction of this device be such a good idea? Well, after this accident on Sunday, should we really look at it again?
I don't see what this difference in straight line speed is such a big fuss, because we're back in the turbo days when you had like the super powerful Honda turbo engines. You had then overtake like puny Cosworth V8s. You never saw anyone crashing into the back of like a Williams Honda or a McLaren Honda, ramming straight into the back of a little Tyrrell Ford. Because they normally had speeds of like 50, 60 mile an hour between them.
If you were sitting in, sitting in a Dallara and coming up behind you was the McLaren, we're talking about the late 80s here, but the last few years of the Turbo 88, we'll say, you knew that that car was going to be considerably faster in a straight line. With this device, you know, you don't know whether you're, because it's activated in a time delay, whether the drivers are close enough at a certain section. You don't know if a driver behind you is actually going to approach you with more speed or not. You know, he might be able to have the wing down or adjusted at a certain point, but then others not. So the drivers in their mind, when you know they're looking in their mirrors or what they can see, they're going to have a sense of doubt there. I mean, so there's going to be variable increases in differences of speed from lap to lap, for example. It isn't a simple case of when you have a car that's considerably faster. I mean, drivers aren't that stupid. They know that they should get out of the way and not fight it. But if you've got a car of an equal pace and one lap around one corner, it's a certain... It pulls up to a certain point behind you mid-corner, but then in the next lap it's right up your rear and it could actually clip you. It is quite unsafe, I think.
Will the drivers be in control of the rear wings?
Yes, but I think that...
So if the drivers weren't in control of it, that's even more dangerous.
This happened in the turbo days as well, when you had drivers who used to control with the boost knob in the car.
Yeah.
I tell you though, it was quite scary. Trillian Allen said a good point. You know, there could be, he's had a fair few accidents in his time, Jarno Trulli, but he was right in saying, you know, there could be a number of rear wing failures, which is potentially dangerous. I mean, a failure of the rear wing is far more colossal than anything that would happen on the front.
Yeah.
Yes, the front can come under and trap the front wing, the wheels, but at least in that way you've got the rear braking, but the loss of the rear downforce is awful.
Yeah, I imagine.
But then at the same time, I can imagine the FIA trying to use a standardised system. Now, do we really need more standardisation in Formula One? It's a vicious circle here. I mean, it's something that we should talk about later. Cass, I'll let you guys come in with a final word on it before we move on.
Well,
I think the FIA should stop poncing around with these silly artificial ideas and, like, say, go look at the cars from, say, the 1985 season. Look at them. They could overtake. Why could they overtake? It's because they were wide, had big, fat, grippy slicks, hardly any aero, big, slabby turbos. Enough said. And not all these poncy little gizmos.
Guys,
I think... I don't know how the idea is going to work. The fueling was a lot of, you know, speculation after Bahrain. Wasn't going to work, and it's worked. It's been a good season of F1 so far. But the thing is, I don't see why they can't strap these ideas onto the back of a GP2 car or a 2000. Get the teams in the overtaking working group to go, right, build us this system then, and we'll send it around a racetrack, and they'll just, you know, hire a couple of test drives for the day, stick them in an 09 car with this rear wing system and the KERS system. And just try it for a bit and just get the driver's opinion on it. Perhaps get the drivers down there, you know, Alonso and Lewis, it's a couple of 09s and Ferraris, just get them to duke it out for a bit. What do you reckon, lads? The drivers need to be consulted more. It's no use going to an aerodynamicist and going, right, here's my idea, what do you reckon? Because that's what they're testing, you know. They need to test these things, otherwise what's going to happen is this system's going to be introduced and it might work and it might be brilliant, but then it might not. And it's a 50-50 chance. You might get just every race you're just going to see cars flipping upside down, or you might see some faster overtaking moves. You know, but on the day, overtaking does happen. It's the tracks more than anything.
I mean, that's true. And I think if you introduce these artificial methods, it kind of destroys the art of overtaking. I mean, when Lewis Hamilton is able to pull the trigger and overtake and pull off one of the moves that he does, one of the breathtaking moves, you're all in awe of his skill. I mean, it's going to be damaged slightly if he's been helped a wee bit. I mean, I'm all for chaos, I suppose, because I realise Formula One needs to be road relevant, but it is slightly artificial in a way, but you can see the good sides of it. I don't know what this wing is going to produce, but moving on, and we're
I think the obvious sign of if this rear wing thing ruins it all, makes it artificial, will be if we actually see Vettel overtaking people. Because he can't overtake.
Right, well, let's move on. I just mentioned Lewis Hamilton there, and obviously...
You know what to see? With this rear wing system, I'm going to say, you're not going to see overtakes where it's diving down the inside on a corner. You're just simply going to see cars falling as close as possible, entering a straight, and then just driving past them. It's going to be very, very boring overtakes. Because the speed difference between having a full-on rear wing and then no rear wing, and a driver setting his curves up, you're going to see a guy going curves, rear wing, bye, and he'll be ahead of him for the corner. And obviously, I've heard of the system, you can't retaliate. So basically, that car's going to be ahead of him, well ahead of him before the corner, and he's just going to drive past him. It'd be like overtaking someone in a slow lane of a motorway. You're in the fast lane, you just go a bit faster than. It's not like anything exciting. I do it every day, you know. What you want to see is people diving on the inside of corners. Corners are for overtaking. You know, give a car a rear wing like that. It's going to be like a motorway.
Yep. Well, let's move on. The consequences of Mark Webber hiking over Lennon's accident was obviously the safety car was deployed, and this created the biggest controversial moment of the European Grand Prix when Lewis Hamilton, mistakenly or not, overtook the safety car before this, as it left the pits before the second safety car line, obviously. And in some ways, you could say gained an advantage over his rivals as he was able to go on a bit faster than, say, Fernando Alonso and co, who was stuck behind the pace car and had to follow it in parade fashion. Of course, this later left Alonso fuming and Ferrari, and you heard it over the radio transmissions for the rest of the race as they fell far behind and their chances of winning the race were dashed. Whereas Hamilton was benefited by the fact that it took the FIA stewards so long to reach a verdict on whether he had caused an accident, whether he had done it out of on purpose or not. And subsequently, he was allowed to serve his drive-through in second place and emerge, still keeping that position. So what was your view on the incident? Do you think that Ferrari were right to complain? Do you think that Hamilton really did it on purpose, or do you think it was just a clear situation where the rules clashed with each other and was no real conciseness?
I think that it was such a marginal offence. I think, you know, the reason the safety car went out without picking up Vettel was because he wanted to get the safety car, escorting the medical car to the scene of the accident, which is totally understandable. Safety comes first. Lewis hesitated because I don't think he was too sure. Then he realised he could make it, so he went for it. And I could understand the punishment of a pit stop penalty if he dived in front of the safety car and nearly caused an accident. He didn't. He only just, such a marginal thing. And I'd just give him a small fine for it. You know,
and that's why it took the FIA so long to decide.
Exactly.
Because they had to get a hold of, obviously, all the timing data, the aerial film footage from the helicopter, the use of GPS system to be 100% sure that Hamilton had definitely passed the safety car before it exited.
Sorry to put the football into this again, but this is the difference. Everyone's saying the two sporting bodies, the two biggest sporting bodies in the world, made two big errors, you know, that weekend, obviously with the FIFA, with the goal line technology, and the FIA making this decision, taking so long to do so. But the thing is, the FIA did it exactly right. They can look to the technology with the cameras. They looked at all possible camera angles, and it took a while to get, like you say, the aerial footage. And they also considered the transponders in the cars and looked at the transponders. And that's the way you need to do it. And they were thorough about it. And they said, right, here's a punishment. Now, fine. It took a long time to give that punishment, and Lewis was able to maintain a gap. But that's not dissimilar to what happened with Mark Webber in Germany in 2009, Mark Webber just put some impressive fast laps in. I mean, as soon as Lewis, it was announced Lewis, this was being investigated, Lewis started banging fast laps in. And he must have had about 10 or so laps before it was announced that it was going to be a punishment. Then he had two laps to just do some really quick qualifying style laps, and he was right up behind Vettel, pitted, and he was, you know, ahead. But the thing is, though, it ruined the race. I mean, I don't see why they could have just gone, right, here's a fine, let's watch the race, and he would have beat Vettel. Fine, that's going to really wind up Alonso. But Alonso had lost a lot because of the safety car, not because of Lewis.
Exactly. I mean, don't get me wrong, I can understand why Alonso would be so furious in the car. He's coming up against his bitter rival.
Yep.
But also Ferrari, it really hasn't turned out well this year. And they've brought these updates to Valencia, thinking that they'd get them back on track. And I can understand why he'd feel slightly aggrieved.
With Lewis and Nando's, when Lewis was asked, would you race again with Fernando Alonso? And Lewis went, yeah, sure, I wouldn't have a problem with it. He was, pushed me as a teammate, and, you know, I wouldn't have a problem with it. And Alonso asked the same question, and it just went, no.
Well, I was going to say, it does say a lot about the relationship, and I wonder if we'll ever find, if we will ever find out about the real goings on in 2007, but I suppose that'll not happen until Alonso at least has retired. Ferrari were furious, and they started shouting and spilling all this
Italian arm waving
anger out over their website. The man from Del Monte, they're
surprised he didn't break another TV.
yes, look at the man at Zemelo. Issued this statement that I quote, the result of yesterday's, obviously Sunday's race, was misrepresentative. Ferrari, which showed itself to be competitive in the European Grand Prix, paid a price that was too high for respecting the rules. He goes on to say that the race was very serious and unacceptable, and it creates a dangerous precedent and damages the credibility of Formula One. Although team principal Stefano Domenicali came out and said that Ferrari had a right to feel aggrieved about it, tonight actually Fernando Alonso has come out and apologised for his anger, his outburst, saying that obviously in the clear light of day that he was much calmer, and obviously at the time he was affected by his emotions getting the better of him. But what I would say, does Ferrari have a point in a way? Should the safety car rules be clarified? Should we have a situation where the pace car picks up the leaders before the pit lane is opened? I realise you mentioned the safety situation there, but do you think the FIA could maybe station another safety car to maybe be able to escort the medical car, whereby the safety car itself is there to, you know, make it a little bit fairer so drivers that are in position don't lose out again and there's not a repeat of this incident?
Yeah, the incident, I think basically since 2007, the FIA have really seriously messing up the safety car rules. I think it's better if we go back to the 2007 rules because there's no refueling anymore, we aren't going to see people diving into the pits when they're closed, unless of course someone goes and wrecks a tyre whilst they're out there. But yeah, I think there is more than one safety car. So why not use it? It's not the first, mind you, this isn't the first case of a messed up safety car routine this year, because they kept messing up the safety car procedure at Le Mans this year as well.
Yeah, there's no guarantee that two safety cars would make it any fair. You might get half the pack behind one.
I didn't mean like that. I meant more that you said that the safety car was used to escort the medical car to the scene, quite rightly.
Yeah, fair enough.
Do you think that they should have that? They should have an actual pace car to deal with the field, and a separate car to deal with escorting the medical car.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't see why not. The thing is, though, I think what happened there is you'd have to get what should have happened. Really, is they should have picked up Alonso, then Lewis, and then. Lewis, I mean, how do you do that situation? Then Lewis and Vettel should have had to slow down and then let the safety car overtake and then pull behind the safety car in race order. I mean, it's messy with the safety car. I mean, you've got to have a situation, really. The ideal situation is they should all line up by the hand of the safety car in the same order that the safety car was deployed on. There should be no free pit stops, you know, and all that stuff.
You're right, it is very messy.
It's just so hard to get your head around. I mean, I can understand Alonso's frustration. He's running third, he's thinking, I can have these two guys for the win. Safety car comes out and he's at eighth. Very annoying, but he took it out on Alonso.
That's motor racing.
Hamilton. Well, yeah, it's motor racing. That's happened to every single team in F1 a lot of times. McLaren, Red Bull, Renault, I think they've all lost out like that. And their response would have been, yeah, we lost out because of the safety car. And then we'll go on to fight better next race. But Ferrari, it's like basically they think they've got a divine right to not be hard done by, and it's just not the way it works.
I think it's probably because they were so much used to having the safety car work it their way. Back in the days when Schumacher was racing, they had Ross Brawn to make all the right calls.
Well, we're running out of time here in the GPT cast, so there's a few more moments from the Grand Prix I'd quite like to run by you, if we can be as brief as possible. The race was obviously won by Vettel, and as you said, Gus, it was comfortable after Hamilton's drive-through. Do you think Vettel's back in the championship race?
Depends on Silverstone, I think.
Well, yes, Red Bull are expected to dominate Silverstone. Well, they were meant to be, but as Valencia showed, the rate of development for the teams means that to look at the previous form, it's not the best way of trying to predict who's going to come out on top. And as you say, McLaren are going to introduce their full-blown diffuser system, so it's going to be an interesting battle. A few other things. Williams did fantastically well. Unfortunate for Hulkenberg having to retire, but Rubens Barrichello flew the flag and finished fourth. Johnny, it's great to see the Grove team back.
Oh, yes, absolutely. My tactic of constantly saying it's the worst Williams ever built, it's a dog of a car, seems to have worked, because that's what happened when Eddie Jordan said that about last year's McLaren. And what happened? They started coming back on form. But yeah, I think Barrichello has really helped the team with their development. Apparently,
yeah,
someone at the someone at the factory has said, without Rubens, we would have been nowhere this year. And Patrick, and Williams have got a blown diffuser coming up to Silverstone as well. And Patrick Head says that they're expecting to find about half a second or so with it.
That'd bring him close to pole.
Yeah, well, I don't think he'll be close to pole, but in the top eight, I'd say, because everyone else...
What was he, fifth? He was fifth, wasn't he? Was he not?
Yeah.
So if he's fifth...
Yeah,
he was fourth.
Sorry, fourth. In this race, he's going to get half a second. He could be on a podium.
It could depend on the outline of it. It could depend layout to layout. But you're right, Silverstone should favour Williams. Fingers crossed. Michael Schumacher, another weekend from hell.
Lucky, wasn't
he? He wasn't helped by the safety car. That's another thing that I was calling for the safety car to really, the rules to be clarified, because there was a bit of a mix-up when he exited the pit lane after his tyre stopped and he was forced to wait, and they were a little bit unsure, Mercedes, if that was the right procedure. So a lot of things need to be clarified, and it's a shame to see Michael, whatever you think about him, it's a shame to see Mercedes being so
off
the pace.
Nicholl said he was wasting his afternoon.
Yeah.
So if Nicholl's saying that, and Michael, you know, Michael's unlucky, really. You know, he's been up and down with passing races. He seems to be just touching on being the old Michael back, and just keeps slipping away. But I think the driver of the race really was
Michael Bayashi.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Absolutely fantastic. Obviously a benefit from the safety car, but I'm sure you two would be both impressed by his drive.
I think what's quite impressive about, the car was the Sauber's, because you remember in pre-season testing when people were actually tipping Sauber to be dark horses this year, and they were saying, oh, the Sauber looks pretty good because it looks after its tyres well. And late into the race, even into lap 50, whatever, he was still saying some pretty good times on the tyres that he'd had on since the start of the race. So I think the fact that he was able to preserve the tyres probably helped him keep up the pace and not cause a big train.
Yeah, I tell you, his pace was actually very good when he was running in third. I mean, it was strong.
It was slowly buttoned up.
It was fantastic. He was strong, but we will admit that. I mean, Button might have become more of a factor if he hadn't been behind Kobayashi, but it was great to see him up there. And his last few laps when he was on the fresh rubber was great to watch, you know, especially Alonso, who knows what was going on in that side of that helmet, but he was quite troubled. But then Buemi, so it was great. I, for one, hope that this will give him the confidence to rekindle the kind of form that we've seen of him last year.
Yes.
Because he was a bright young talent, and he just dropped off. His head just dropped at the start of the year.
If you keep racing like that, he won't belong to the top team.
Fingers crossed, because it's great for Japan. They're so fanatical about Formula 1.
Yep.
You know, we are really at the other side of the world, but whenever they go to Suzuka, they are crazy about it. And it'd be great for one of these days, especially given the Honda and Toyota pulling out in recent years, it'd be great to have something for them to cheer on when they reach their native Grand Prix. So fingers crossed.
I'd tip Colby to go to Renault if Kimi doesn't come back.
Well, that's one thing.
But no, Vitaly Petrov does.
Robert Kubica looked very quick before qualifying. In the practice session, I think Renault were slightly disappointed with the qualifying result. They never got the full pace out of the car, the R30. But reports today suggest that the team's looking in rude health, and Kubica might sign for them. So that's very good. It's good for the security. And as you just mentioned, guys, there is rumours going about that their owner may look to tempt Kimi Räikkönen back, but as usually is the case in the Formula 1, that might be quite wide of the mark. But
yeah,
you never know.
Look at those, what
you
are doing, getting Kimi back. That's
a beautiful race. GP Gash should start a campaign. But in the next edition...
Iceman back.
Bring him back.
With his ice cream and cola in hand.
Well, unlike the BBC F1 forum that suffered a power cut, coincidentally when the England game was on.
Yeah.
We at the GB Cast are here as ever. And next week we'll be back with our preview for the British Grand Prix. Yes, it's our home race. Johnny's going to be there. It'd be nice, Johnny, if you could somehow come back and tell us about that. We'll maybe fix something up. That's for a different conversation out with this broadcast. So for I want to thank Gaz and Johnny for their company in tonight's edition. I hope you enjoyed the GP Cast. As ever, stick it here on ForOnTheL1.net for all the news and views. Until next time, goodbye.
Bye.